This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast version, the, 20th now, I think?
Is it? I think it is. I think we're up to 20 now. Yeah. So jeez. How time flies when you're having fun.
Or whatever else you may be doing. We're almost legal, though. Next one will be 21. So
that'll be a good thing. It'll be Jessica's age, 21.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
Hey, we've got everybody all at Twitter out there, not on the Twitter, but about your new gig. I teased them and said, Matt's got a new gig. They're probably all tuned in right now. I want to find out all about this. Take it away, Matt.
Well, as of next Monday, a week from today, January the 8th, I will be taking on the job of director of the News Bureau at Lawrence Technological University. And we have here in studio with us, so please be nice, Mike, my future boss, Bruce Annette, who is associate vice president of several things, right?
Yes, I'm associate vice president of marketing and public affairs at Lawrence Tech.
Okay. So basically, I am going to come over there and run three magazines. There's two Lawrence Tech magazines,
correct,
one per semester,
mm-hmm,
and then a research magazine. And I thought this was a really interesting part of the job because the audience for the Lawrence Tech Research Magazine, it's called Innovation, is not local. Talk a little bit about that magazine, if you could.
Correct. Well, it's the magazine of our College of Engineering. It does go nationally and internationally. The publication is very well regarded. It's given a lot of publicity and exposure to the College of Engineering at Lawrence Tech. And it looks at all the exciting things that our students and faculty are doing over the course of the year.
Okay. And basically, a lot of the reason you do that is because a lot of these college rankings, like U.S. News and World Report, are sort of peer rankings, right? They ask colleges about other colleges.
That's correct. Yeah, the fact is that Lawrence Tech, as a relatively small private university, doesn't have perhaps the top of mind awareness that big state public universities have, and so the magazine is a good way to get word out to other deans, other presidents, administrators at other college and universities about the many things that happen at our university, and there are a lot.
Okay. And I will be writing about those too. I'll be doing press releases for university events, awards, lectures, seminars, colloquia, you name it. We'll be trying to raise
student
the visibility.
Student research, faculty research.
Yep. We'll be trying to raise the visibility of all that stuff. And also, I asked you about this in the interview process, and I regret to inform all of you that you are going to let me continue to do this podcast. So we're going to be raising the awareness of Lawrence Tech through these here airwaves as well. And we're also going to be continuing the TechCentury.com sort of overview of Michigan technology, and it will now be co-branded with Lawrence Tech and the Engineering Society of Detroit, my about-to-be former employer. So there will still be a TechCentury.com as well, only that's going to have like a Lawrence Tech component to it now.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific partnership. Matt, you know, there aren't too many folks like yourself who have delved into technology and technological subjects as long and as frequently as you have. And so we're looking forward to expanding the partnership and helping you give exposure to our university, which I think it richly deserves.
All right. Well, stick around. We're going to be talking more about Lawrence Tech and its programs and its recent growth and all of that good stuff at 3:45. For now, Mike, let's talk headlines just a little bit. This is something we do most every week on this podcast. We talk about the Michigan technology and IT news headlines of the week. I thought this was interesting from a renewable energy standpoint. There's a beer distributor of all things in Orion Township, a subject near and dear to my heart, called Powers Distributing Company, and they did Oakland County's first PACE project. PACE is a program we've talked about here on the program before. It's a way to finance energy improvements by basically taking repaying your the money you borrow to do energy efficiency improvement and putting that on your taxes like a tax assessment, which makes it more gives it a higher level of safety as a loan for the bank. So they'll loan you money at lower interest rates and for longer terms. And Powers Distributing Company, this beer distributor in Orion Township, financed LED lighting and a 45-kilowatt solar array on top of their building through PACE financing. A friend of mine and a friend of the Engineering Society named Jim Newman, Newman Consulting Group, was behind that particular project. So I thought that was an interesting bit of news. Mike?
Well, excuse me here, clear my throat. The National Venture Capital Association came out with some studies on what are the top metropolitan statistical areas and who gets the most dough. And, of course, we didn't make the top 10, even the top 20, but Ann Arbor did make 24th. And there was a number of other Michigan cities, five or six of them, that were in the top 133. I think we've made considerable strides in the venture capital area over the years. We're never going to be a California or a New York, but I think we're doing good. We got almost 40 in the state now, I believe.
Yeah, that used to be – that's an old joke that I've told several times, including once here, I know. Mary Kramer, years ago when I worked at Crane's Detroit Business, showed me a list of venture capitalists that Crane Chicago Business did and said, hey, this is pretty cool. Why don't we do a list of Michigan venture capitalists? And I said, well, it won't take up much space. Yeah, right.
Two, three names there.
Yeah, there was like two or three venture capital funds in the whole state at that point. And that situation has improved greatly. And a lot of it has been at the prodding of state government. I know Governor Engler, Governor Granholm, this has been a bipartisan thing. Both parties have really pushed this. And, Governor Snyder, of course, being a former venture capitalist himself, has been behind it as well. But there are now 30-some funds operating in the state. And really what, the Silicon Valley-oids like to call the venture capital ecosystem has sort of formed here, where you have that group of people with money, the people who work for them and with them, the accountants, the lawyers, the deal makers, the investment bankers, those kind of folks. You sort of need everybody. You need a group of several hundred people to really make an ecosystem like that work, and it's finally happening here. Dave Brophy's another big force behind that from U of M.
Yeah, absolutely. He calls himself the Big Pumbaa or something, but he's been doing the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium for, at least 30 years, although I don't think it's 30 consecutive years. But he was one of the first back when I was at the Free Press. He was even doing it.
Yep. Another thing I wanted to mention, a topic near and dear to our hearts here at the M Squared TechCast, and I know some of our guests as well. There's a program that Michigan Technological University up in the UP, Michigan State, and the University of Michigan, they've all been selected for. It's called the National Center of Women and Information Technology Pacesetters Program. It's sponsored by Qualcomm and the National Science Foundation. Pacesetters is a two-year program under which these participating schools will develop what they call aggressive and measurable goals for increasing the number of women in the American computing and technology workforce. Michigan currently has more than 16,000 job openings in computing, according to code.org, and the number of women participating in these programs at the higher education level is, I would describe it as somewhere between abysmal and mediocre. I think we could do a whole lot better. So that these folks are going to get a couple of million bucks from the feds to develop programs to get more girls, interested in these fields.
We should probably mention, of course, we have in studio two of the three tech divas. One was a latecomer, but Nicole Johnson Scheffler. I got to remember to throw that last name in there. Plus, there's actually – we got one in the oven there that's going to be a tech. Yeah. There'll be four of you at some point, right?
Yeah, she's already in training.
Okay, good.
Okay.
And Amanda Luan, many hats that Amanda wears. She's over at Michipreneur.com as the editor-in-chief there and Bamboo Detroit. And, am I missing anything?
No, I think that's good.
That's good for now?
Hi, everybody.
Bamboo Detroit is a terrific you can't really call it a business incubator. It's a co-working space more like, right? I mean, you can get a spot there for a small amount of money and have an office, someplace to hang out, someplace to meet people.
Yeah, we provide affordable, collaborative space downtown. Especially if you're a startup, everybody wants to get downtown where a lot of the companies are, the networking, the Rocket Fiber internet upgrade is there. And so
is that a good
service?
We provide
a really – yeah, I think it is actually. We're going to – And we're going to have Christina Mathis on in a little bit to talk about Rocket Fiber.
Okay.
And you guys do lots of educational events.
Yep, lots of programming. So it's more like you come, you work, you network, you drop in and learn a little bit about business here and there. It's really designed for the fast-paced entrepreneur, the modern worker, we like to say.
Yeah, I even went in there in December and ran into somebody I didn't even know was working there, Hans Eriksson. I was walking around oblivious, and suddenly I heard my name, and Hans, what are you doing here? So apparently he works there a lot too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens all the time. One of our partners kind of describes co-working as like being at a conference because you have so many people who like share an interest with you working in one space. So you constantly run into people. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I got one more headline here before we turn it over to the ladies. And if I'd be remiss, otherwise Dave Weaver will yell at me. We don't want that. Great Lakes Angels on February 10th is having a due diligence seminar. And I got to tell you right now, if you're ever thinking about getting into private investing, this is like the key. You got to know whether these people are, shall we say, fibbing, or whether what the story they're really telling is true. So the due diligence, it's a half a day seminar. The pricing and everything is at mitechnews.com. And I think you covered it too, didn't you, Matt?
Yep. It's also at techcentury.com.
Yeah. So you can get all the details there February 10th in the afternoon. And again, if anybody out there is thinking about going into angel investing and you're not so sure, this would be the event you want to go to find out whether it's what you really want to do.
Yep. And it's, of course, there's a networking event afterwards, which is also a big part of this deal. It's who you meet accidentally that's just as important as who you meet intentionally, I think, in that business.
Absolutely. There's a lot of moneyed players in Michigan that are on the sidelines. What you run into a lot is people only want to invest in what they know, clearly,
sure.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's primarily the auto industry where a lot of the people with the money are. But we got to get more people in more areas investing in more things. But anybody out there, but there are criteria is you have to be making $250,000 a year. I know Nicole's got that covered.
I wish.
Or a net worth, not including your house, of $1 million, and that's Amanda. So they're probably both want to come to the due diligence seminar, right? So
no, I think that sounds great. The entrepreneurs really need to go through that and get used to that process.
Yeah.
But like what you were saying, people only want to invest in what they know, and I think getting more women in tech and in entrepreneurship is also about breaking down the barrier of investing who you know as well and just getting that network out. So any ladies listening should definitely check it out.
All right. I think we got to go to break. Yes. I'm looking at Jessica.
She's
signaling yes.
We will be back with our stand-in hosts here from Tech Divas, Amanda and Nicole, interviewing Christina Mathis of Rocket Fiber and Monica Weed of Digirati Girls. We'll be right back with more of the M Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan, and you're back for the second segment of M Squared TechCast. I can do that. We have in the studio with us Amanda Luan, one of many hands, Michipreneur.com, Bamboo Detroit, and then her able-bodied partner there who's playing with her tour. I got to get her to look up. Nicole Johnson Scheffler. Have we got a name picked out for the new Scheffler?
Yeah, Nora.
Nora Scheffler. She's joining us sort of, but not really. But you can go into that if you want.
It's interesting finding out I'm having a girl and being so passionate about women in tech. So, and also looking at different baby gadgets that are there's a stroller that actually rolls itself, can warm bottles, charge your phone.
Damn.
Oh, my goodness.
Damn.
That's quite the baby Benz there. Holy moly.
Yeah, I won't be getting that $2,700 stroller, but I'll push it and bring a pocket charger.
Something. Gosh, you could put a solar panel on top of it or something, right?
It's amazing the options these days. I think a cardboard box is good, but you know, it does get my mind thinking about the next generation and the type of work that we're all doing here, and you know, just to get that to be an option, STEM careers to be an option. So it's an incredible testament to hear a lot of things happening in Michigan around enabling women and giving them those role models and opportunities.
No, STEAM. You got to add the arts. Yay, arts people, because I never was really a science person. I don't know how I got into technology coverage, but 35 years ago I wandered in and I've been there ever since, but I love the arts.
Well, historically, if you read – I'm reading a book called Innovators by Walter Isaacson. And if you look back, the people who were very keen and critical to innovation and technology had an arts background, whether it was the actual arts or music. For me, it's music and technology. So I agree. I think STEAM is a very important piece.
Absolutely.
So I second that emotion.
All right. Yeah.
Just look at Da Vinci. I mean, come on. He did it all, right? Science, art, the whole bit.
Yes, I would not put myself in that category by any means. Way down the list there, you know. So, Amanda?
Yes, hello.
So,
we're here with Christina Mathis from Rocket Fiber. So, Christina is super awesome. She's one of the divas we've interviewed on our podcast, Diva Tech Talks, which you can find on iTunes and online. And we met Christina. We've known the Rocket Fiber team for a long time. They started up out of our space and grew, and Christina was super instrumental in the early days helping them launch, and we just thought she had a fascinating story, so we thought we'd invite her to share a little bit about what they're doing now with Rocket Fiber, what her role is, and how, you know, as a woman in tech, what it's like working at a startup.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So, do tell. What's it like? I mean, is working with Amanda is very difficult, I understand.
I mean, not at all.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what do you do at Rocket Fiber? Why don't we start there?
So I am the Vice President of Client Experience and Mousetrap, as we call it, for Rocket Fiber. So we do end-to-end business process design, development, cultural promotion, innovation. Mousetrap actually comes from the Quicken Loans world. So Rocket Fiber is a spinoff out of the Quicken Loans family of companies. And I have a background at Quicken Loans. I was there for 15 years as a vice president in technology and made the move over to startup world. So it's been interesting.
Quite different, isn't it?
It's very different. I mean, it's interesting because some parts of it are exactly the same, right? We're building, you know, I moved out of the mortgage industry and now I'm into the technology ISP space. The processes are the same. The people processes are the same. The issues are the same. It's just a different environment. So it's cool.
So what is Rocket Fiber doing that's, you know, setting you guys apart from some of the other competitors?
So we offer gigabit internet speeds, right? So 1 gig, 10 gig speeds to the residents, to the home, and then 10 gig to 100 gig for businesses in the city of Detroit. We'll be looking at expansion throughout the rest of the city and into the suburbs in the coming years. We're extremely, extremely focused on the client experience, which is, I think, what sets us apart from our competition. We all know the issues that are out there in our industry and how people tend to be treated. So we are going to do everything we can to set that experience apart.
Are you alluding to the big players that we could name, but we won't?
We will not name them. No, we will not.
Those big companies.
The big guys, yeah.
So how big is your footprint now? I asked Amanda the last time we talked about this. He wasn't quite sure. How much of the city do you encompass now?
So right now, we've got about a six-mile ring that's set up, and we're bringing buildings online one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
We're right in the downtown area, and then we just right now are in the midst of launching in Midtown, which is exciting. The rest of the city will start to come online very quickly from
here. So they're up towards the old GM building up through there?
Mm-hmm.
So is the first line along Woodward or one of the streets a block either side of it, that kind of thing?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
We followed the M1 rail line down the Woodward corridor, and then we're building a loop from there so that we've got redundancy.
How close is that to getting done? I haven't been downtown in a while. Is it pretty close?
I was down there over the weekend. It's getting there. They said it might not open next summer as they'd planned, but it won't be too much longer after
that. Next summer as in the summer coming, not a year from now.
Right, yeah, exactly. Summer 16 was when it was supposed to open originally, I thought. But
yeah,
it might be early 17 instead. But the gauntlet of construction that one has to run down there is not nearly as bad as it was a year ago, I know.
Correct,
so.
Yeah,
I remember when I had to go something at Wayne State, and I forgot all about that. So I got off the freeway. And everything was torn up.
Yeah,
I didn't know I was going to get there.
Yeah,
you know?
You couldn't get there. Well, one of the things they were putting in all that tear up was the rocket fiber, right?
Yep.
You went right in alongside it.
Yeah, so no one knew at the time. We had not launched. We had actually been constructing for a year before anyone found out that we were building lines. And it was funny when it did come out, because then the news discovered that if you just looked into the lines where the rails were going, and that you could see rocket fiber all over the place. And
well, that's the quality of reporting has gone down in this town a little bit. So.
Not nearly as many shoes on the street in the media.
Sure isn't.
But anyway, one of the things I like about talking to people from Rocket Fiber is that I ask them, well, what do you think people are going to do with gigabit internet to a just regular office? And the fun part is you guys say, I have no idea.
We have no idea. That's the cool part. Yeah. You know, we're starting to see a lot of folks migrating to Detroit because there's an option there, mm-hmm. right, that didn't exist before. And they know that the service will be reliable. That's been the issue in the past. You can get internet downtown. It's just not reliable. And when you call to do something about it, no one will help you with it. So now there's an option for really fast speeds. People like tweeting about it and putting it out there on Facebook. It's a cool thing in addition to being able to help rebuild the city. So we have no idea what people will do. I think that'll be the most fascinating thing. We keep saying that our benchmark for success will be when giant companies come to Detroit because they know they can build something here that they can't build somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it too, I was going to say, is about service. We're seeing a big movement. I work at Cisco as an engineer, so we're seeing a big movement with cloud services.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of organizations today will replace the cost of having on-prem equipment, collaboration, whatever it may be, with cloud services. And I think Rocket Fiber's infrastructure will be a driver for that, which is going to start to be a critical operating cost for business.
My question is, most people connect through Wi-Fi. Is it going to be gigabit speed Wi-Fi then when you're connecting? Or how's that going to play out?
Right now, we're seeing in the residential space, we'll see anywhere between 150 meg to 450 meg, depending on the equipment that you're running on Wi-Fi speeds.
Yeah,
this
old computer here was hooking up at the auto show press room at like 550 meg, and I was just I was just looking at that on speed test, just going, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like, you know, who knows what you
Rocket
can do
Fiber in Cobo too? Is that
we sponsored a few booths in Cobo that will remain nameless for some internet.
Who would we tell?
Come on. It's not like this is going on the internet or anything. I mean, come on, though.
But it's
exactly
really what you mentioned, Christina, about businesses moving in. I think it's really important because there is a little bit of a lower cost for a business to get started, to have rent, to live downtown than many other urban cities. And that's attracting millennials. We don't want to live in, you know, south. We don't want to live and work in the suburbs. We want to be in, like, more urban environments where there's more creativity, more density, mm-hmm. more things happening.
So who the heck am I going to sell my house to when the time comes? Well, anyway.
Okay. Family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
then you have family.
So what happens, though, because all due respect, the Detroit public schools are not so good.
Yeah, there's plenty of fine private schools if you want.
Yeah, but I see what happens is a lot of the folks, once they start getting married, making babies, then they move out to the suburbs because the schools are better and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but they still want it walkable. That's the big thing.
You might see an evolution in that in the coming years, though, too, right? The schools have been reaching out to us. We host a lot of students on site in the office to talk to them about the many fields in technology and if Rocket Fiber continues to grow the way that we anticipate, the types of jobs that we'll be looking to hire for in the future. So I think, you know, I have a 9-year-old and a 4-year-old. I think that it'll be a completely different landscape when my kids are grown, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up at 8 Mile and Gratiot. I remember what Detroit was when I was little. I remember watching it morph to what it is today. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing a complete transformation again. And it's crazy. Awesome.
Well, starting with downtown and kind of spreading from there.
Yep, exactly.
There's still some pockets that could be changed. But this is what's going to happen. The area where the Red Wing whole thing is going in, that used to be pretty nasty in there. And
well, it wasn't scary because there were bad people there. It was scary because there were no people there.
Well,
there,
right? it was like
they let buildings crumble. I mean, yeah. You don't do that.
Yeah, now
in most cities, literally, you go to other cities, you don't drive around for – you can't go probably for a 2-mile drive in Detroit without seeing abandoned buildings. And
right.
It's not like that in other cities.
It's not.
So
yeah.
I think we're making a ton of progress, and Rocket Fiber adds to that by attracting more people. And mm-hmm. I think that's great. That's what we need.
Put yep. together.
Well, what's the game plan then? You're going to go out to 8 Mile at some point and then move out into the suburbs, or what's happening?
That's the goal. Yep. The goal is to expand throughout the city in the next year or so and then continue building from there. So we're aiming to head to where demand is highest next. So we're asking folks to come to rocketfiber.com and hit get fiber and submit your information so that we can let you know when we're in your area.
And wow, I like
it counts
that.
As a vote.
Yeah, count your vote.
Mm-hmm.
We could push that.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, there needs to be a Twitter handle for that, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Your vote counts.
Okay.
Yeah, your vote, even if it may not count in the presidential election, it
yep.
counts with Rocket
exactly.
Fiber.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Won't even go into that circus. God, I can't believe what we got for an election going on. But we don't talk politics on this show much.
Well, maybe a little state politics.
Yeah.
But
so... Cool. Yeah.
Well, it's been great getting to know Christina. In fact, she's featured on one of our Diva Tech Talk podcasts, episode 6.
Ooh.
And the unique thing about our podcast is that we actually dig into her background and some of the cool things she's done around innovation moving through.
Well, let's do that.
Tell.
Yeah, let's do that a little bit. You said you grew up at 8 in Gratiot. Where did you go to high school and college, all that good stuff?
I went to high school at East Detroit High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college at University of Detroit Mercy. I was going to go to Lawrence Tech. That was a hard call for me, but I graduated
Ooh.
From U of D. I know. And speaking of arts and sciences, mm-hmm. I started in architecture at U of D. That was why
Did
I went
you?
There.
Hmm.
And then ultimately graduated in psychology and have not done anything with it since. So.
Okay.
Well, I think,
I disagree.
You're building a culture and a team, and you're talking to people every day. That takes tremendous
mm-hmm.
skills from psychology, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So
all
then
I'm sure you have crazy people.
Particularly, I was going to say, particularly abnormal psychology.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. That part's true.
Yes, the geek world is a little different. So,
A lot of people there on the spectrum, you might say.
The psychology of a customer experience, though, is very much translated today into a tech world, as you said. Social media, Twitter, those types of social media listening, which I'm really into. Cisco actually has an arm of that too.
Yeah.
But those types of experiences is a way that you get to this next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of psychology behind that.
Yeah. We're building an online platform that will allow people to do what they need to do in the way that they want to do it, which will be fun and
which
cool.
makes it more easy and more relatable if you're a customer and you just need one answer done or you just need, you don't always want to have to call. I don't like calling places. Like,
me neither.
I would rather tweet or email or just get something when I need it online,
Yep.
Hey, getting back to gigabyte speeds, I don't know whether people can wrap their arms around that. I know it's like download a movie in 4 seconds kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like 3D plays, or if you're doing CAD CAM kinds of stuff, you're auto engineer, because that was always like, my God, I got to ship this to Europe and it takes 3 hours or something.
Yep. Auto engineer, we're seeing a lot in the marketing field, uploading and downloading files.
Video
medical
is
fields.
Yep.
Video teleconferencing, all of that fun stuff. So it's going to be really cool to see what people will actually end up using it for. And we're going to work. Amanda has been really great about helping us put together plans to figure out how to highlight some of those stories so that people know how other folks are using the speeds.
I'm waiting for the holographic image thing. That's got to be a huge bandwidth issue, right? If you're going to have this display come floating up from whatever device you have.
Oh.
Star Wars kind of thing.
Yeah.
That would be really awesome.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I saw it, so it must be real, right?
Telehealth stuff is really probably closer too, right?
Yeah, we saw, we had actually a company out in California, I forget where they were, reach out, and they're building robotics, and we were able to control their robot from our office and teleconference
real
it.
Time.
And it was real time and it was awesome.
No kidding. Yeah. Fly those drones. Cool. We could fly drones
fly
real
drones.
Time too.
Yep.
Unarmed, of course. So,
The telehealth is really interesting though because you could have people with basic medical monitoring experience at their homes and then they wouldn't need to go to the doctor anymore, right?
Yep.
They'd be able to send images and data directly to the doctor or a nurse for interpretation.
Yeah, we were I was this weekend actually I saw an article about these things called granny pods. They're like pod-sized homes that fit in your backyard.
Okay.
And it's basically for like mother-in-law, father-in-law type situation, right? You move mom on in there. And it monitors all the medical needs, disperses medication, blood glucose levels, like anything you can think of that a home would need to do. It's all automated.
Sends alerts when they're coming into your house.
Right, exactly. You know when they
Mom's
open their
here.
Door. Yeah. and it's just cool because you need good internet to make something like that work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in a city like Detroit, we have transportation issues. So there's people, once we can get that sort of resource out there, I mean, people can't easily get to and from the doctors.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of things to do with it. Very cool.
All right.
So before, how long have you been with Rocket Fiber then?
1 year.
You were like employee number what? Probably not all that
four.
Many.
Four.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
And before that, where were you?
I was at Quicken Loans. I started there 15, 16 years ago now. And I was a mortgage banker for 9 years.
Hmm.
First female director of mortgage banking there. And then ultimately ended up leading the Mousetrap team, which is part of the technology group.
Okay.
So I did that for – we had
– So let's talk about what Quicken and Rocket Fiber mean by Mousetrap. I was intrigued by that. It's you are not referring to the Agatha Christie murder mystery.
No,
right? Okay.
No, I am not.
Or Mousetrap Mobile up in Royal Oak. There's
not Mousetrap Mobile either, no.
So is it like build a better?
It's build a better Mousetrap.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep, right. Exactly. So we support all the teams throughout Quicken Loans and then some out in the family of companies. And we work with them to make things better. That could be, you know, anything from your personal workspace environment to the workflows that you're using on your computer, where you're parking. I mean, anything you can think of. We try to figure out how to make life better for you and life better for our clients. Also, as part of that group, we've got an internal innovation hub called the Cheese Factory, where all 17,000, I think, at this point, team members can come to submit ideas to make their space better.
17,000?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They work in Detroit? They can't all work in Detroit.
They are not all out of Detroit. We've got the Arizona office and the Cleveland office as well with mortgage bankers and underwriters there. And then basically ideas flow through there and we figure out who's got some really big ones and we try to help that thing happen, which is how Rocket Fiber was born.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which that's innovative in itself. Not a lot of companies listen to new ideas.
Yeah.
And then actually implement.
And actually execute on it. I think that's the part. I've gone out and talked with many companies who have had these like little black boxes, right, where people can submit their suggestions. But what happens to it? Is it an email? You never see it again. You never hear from anyone. And I love that we have a strong commitment to make sure that we're turning those ideas around in a 90-day turn time to let you know if it's something we want to do or not.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds like something that sounds very Dan Gilbert. God help you if you suggest something because he's going to not only do it, he's going to put you in charge of it. Right?
Exactly. So. Well, and that's the thing, right? So Mark Hudson had this idea for Rocket Fiber, and I think a lot of people will have an idea for something and throw it out there expecting somebody else to do it for them. And Dan is very much like, nope, like you have an idea, go figure it out, make it a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go do it and you make it happen, he'll support it.
I suppose he's made a few bucks doing that too,
I'm
right?
I'm sure he has, yeah.
One thing about Dan, when you hear him, I've heard he's talked a few times around Detroit and he's mentioned he wished he had Mousetrap from the very beginning. Like that's one thing he wishes he did early on in the company, which I think is really cool.
Yep, yep. For sure. I think you need people who will just walk around and look and be conscious of their space and ask people what they can do to make their lives better. A few years ago, we were out at – we hosted an event out at the casino, and I took a couple hundred people out onto the casino floor and said, go find stuff that we're going to fix. and everyone went out and we spent an hour talking to people. And one thing that really stuck out is there was a security guard there who said that was this was the first time in my 25-year career that someone ever asked me how I felt.
Really?
And it was really eye-opening.
Which casino?
It was the Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
So we had purchased or invested in that at the time. And it's just so powerful what you can do from a people process or technology process to help make people's lives better. It's very, very interesting.
Well, that's certainly something where you're using the psychology degree, I guess you could say.
That is true.
Yep.
That is
true. That's a good thing. You never know where it's going to come in handy.
Yep.
All right. Well, we got about 10 minutes to fill because one of our guests didn't phone in here.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately, Monica's not going to be able to join us. We'll have to bring her on another time. But I think we can talk about some more updates from our end and a little bit more about women in technology.
Please do.
Yeah, from a women in technology standpoint, Amanda and I were just talking about how March is a great opportunity. I think with it being Women's Month, for those listeners out there or those interested in more opportunities for women in technology, you're going to see a lot of local events around empowering women and education opportunities, networking opportunities. I know Cisco's doing a Women of Impact Day on March 10th. There's several events going on, STEM events at schools. So, you know, I think within your local community, if you just do a search, we'll try to bring it also to this group and let you guys know of those events. And then speaking of healthcare, it's interesting. We were actually out at HIMSS. The Diva team was able to do several interviews several months ago and got some really great stories. And I think that that ties into what we talked about for healthcare. So you'll notice some episodes coming up on our podcast and in the past from different people in the healthcare industry. One I thought was really interesting was the chief nursing officer for IBM, because she truly started as a nurse back when it was mainframe data and realized, hey, as a nurse, I really need this organized by the criticality of the patient or the room number or the doctor, or like organized in different ways. And her ability to recognize the usage of data in different ways and being organized led her to start to work with IT. And then now she's the chief nursing officer of IBM. So listening to some of those stories and just realizing that in any industry, you can become a technologist by being an expert and passionate about your industry and making a difference, whether it's healthcare or transportation or, you know, marketing or any, you know, any background that you have. So it's really unique to hear her story.
Yeah. And I think what we're finding, too, is a lot of women don't necessarily start off as engineers. And that's OK. You can start off from anywhere and get involved and make changes. And so I thought that, yeah, that's a really great point, Nicole.
Yeah, and we just interviewed Deb Swink, who has 27 years in the IT leasing industry, in episode 18. And her story was also very interesting because she was in sales and she actually testified for some of the early legislation around government in allowing and enabling IT leasing for the sake of overall costs. So it's those kind of stories that not only show transformation in industry.
She did that at 8 months pregnant, which is, you know, we've kind of brought that up. Some of us are moms or expecting moms, but that's something that, you know, we need a little bit of a space to talk about. Women, especially in vice president and leadership roles, need a little bit extra space or need to think about how do I balance. Some women we've interviewed said it comes in seasons. Sometimes your career is first. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you have more time for family and it kind of shifts and ebbs and flows. But there's a lot of like cool issues that I think we're able to open up dialogue to that you don't necessarily, no offense, men, but we don't always get to talk about that stuff at the table with you. So.
It's different considerations as well for a business. So in one of the interviews, she talks about her career choices. And in one situation, she had a fork in the road and she wanted just one day off. She was performing. She wanted to be able to work from home for one day. So you really see the importance of your policies and how it can affect
in a good way.
One of those words.
Something like that. It could impact the capabilities for you to retain women and the types of things that women look for when you are struggling for a work-life balance, especially in the early years or really for any parent, men or women, in their older years to make it to the soccer games.
Well, yeah, I think a key is flexibility. And that was certainly the case for me, too. When I was working at WWJ, I got to work from home quite a bit, and I really appreciated it because I would be like one of the very few dads at the 3:30 middle school swim meet.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, that kind of thing. And then I'd go back home at 5:30 and go back to work for, you know, 3-4 hours. But it was really cool to be able to be there. And I think that's what most people are looking for today, I think, is that flexibility rather than, you know, just don't give me work. Nobody wants to say that. But it's just let me do it when I actually can, you know, not
by
your schedule.
We're so connected with all of these devices and technology all the time, 24/7, that the trade-off should be. And that's why sometimes when certain leaders go to the news and say, we're not allowing flexible work schedules, it's like, well, then what kind of roadblock are you putting to diversity and to balance? Because, you know, you either – what is the statement? You live to work or work to live? What is the
– Yeah.
You know,
you're going to have a much tougher time, I think, attracting younger people, too, if you don't allow that flexibility.
That's the thing when you talk about retention. It's not just women, right? It's retaining people who want to have any sort of balance in whatever they're doing in their life. Mm-hmm. You can be man, woman, young person, old person, whatever.
It could be kids. It could be volunteer activity. It could be maybe you're a part-time musician and you really want time to practice with the band. I mean, it could be anything, right?
Yeah, I've always said there's no such thing as like work-life balance. You prioritize
just life.
Whatever happens at the time. Exactly. It's just life. Yeah. You have to figure out how to fit it all in.
Hey, we're running out of time in this section, but I got three high-powered women here. What can the state do now to get more women into STEAM? Here's your pulpit. Go.
Listen to our podcast.
Where's that bell?
Get involved. Yes. Do something. My biggest word of advice is always, if you know or you are a woman in the industry in STEAM, tell someone that you do that. Your neighbor, the kid at the store, encourage people.
I second that.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I think that's the power of storytelling. If you can see more women like Christina leading at a startup, you might not be afraid to be the only girl on that core key team at such an exciting time. And I've been there. I know it's tough. And you kind of just get used to it. And you have open dialogue and you figure it out and work together. But tell your story.
Mm-hmm. And rely on each other. Really spend time to reach out to others and make relationships. Anyone. I mean, just work to build yourself up and build others up around you, because the more you give, the more you'll get in return. And we can make it happen.
Are employers receptive to these ideas?
In my experience, absolutely. It's interesting. The more folks I talk to, the more I see that people want it and they don't know how to impact the change in their own business. So, you know, you get people to rally together and then you really start to see those cultural shifts. And then, you know, as long as you're keeping up with each other and putting yourself out there.
Over the last few years, I think we've seen a rise in support for women in STEM fields across organizations, building communities, offering more things, sponsoring more things. And I think that that's just some momentum that we're going to take. And it's both for men and women, because it's about building a culture where diversity is valued of all types, whether it's sex, race, religion, just being looking for those positive things that we all bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, in terms of, I guess we got some programs like, what was it, Pacesetter program, that are actually putting money where their mouth is and coming up with stuff. Should we have more of that?
Yes, absolutely.
She's going to give me more details than yes. I mean,
absolutely. How can you say no to any? I mean, yeah, you need.
We get to get Dan Gilbert behind this, you know? What do you think?
I'd love it. I mean, Dan and many others throughout the city have a lot of these types of programs, right? We had a program in Quicken Loans called the Red Door Project that was last year targeted towards women. This year it's opened its doors to everyone who's just looking to improve their lives and help each other grow. And I love it. It's cool, you know?
Yeah, we want to give our healing to our other diva, Kathleen, who couldn't be here as she's
she's
probably listening, though, right?
Yeah, she is. She listens to this a lot, so I just wanted to wish her the best as she's healing, recovering.
All right, take care, Kathleen. Unfortunately, we're out of time in this segment. You've been listening to two of the tech divas. The third one we just saluted because she's home with surgery recovering. We also want to thank Christine? Yeah.
Christina Mathis from Rocket Fiber for visiting us today.
Put my sheet the wrong place.
giving us a lot of really cool information about Rocket Fiber and Quicken Loans, her former employer.
And we hope to get Monica Weed on in a future one. Yes, maybe March or something?
Yeah, sure. She's with Digirati Girls, so they do a lot of this educational programming stuff we talked about, yeah.
Sounds great. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you've been listening to segment 2 and 3 of the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with segment 4, Bruce Annette from Lawrence Technological University to talk about Lawrence Tech's tech and engineering programs.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to M Squared TechCast. Our fourth and final segment today is with Bruce Annette. Is it Assistant Vice President or Associate Vice President?
I'm Associate Vice President.
Associate Vice President at Lawrence Technological University. I will learn that very shortly, I promise, because I'm about to go to work for Bruce at Lawrence Tech. He's going to be my boss in the Lawrence Tech News Bureau in the marketing arm of that school.
Can anyone really manage you, Matt?
I'm not sure.
I'm not so sure.
Yes.
You can only hope to contain me. Okay. So let's talk about Lawrence Tech. I've long, you know, admired and respected the school. I've been covering it, you know, and its activities for a long time now as a journalist here in Michigan. So tell me, when was Lawrence Tech founded and by whom?
Lawrence Tech was founded in 1932 at the worst year of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And our founder, Russell Lawrence, was Dean of Engineering at U of D. U of D was actually on its way to bankruptcy, and they were laying off all their lay faculty. He was one of them that laid off, but he saw that if America was ever to get out of the Great Depression, it needed to have a pool of technological and engineering talent. And so he was very much driven to do that. He founded his own college with the help and encouragement of Henry and Edsel Ford, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fords provided our first home in Highland Park on the edge of what had been the Model T plant on Woodward Avenue. And so until 1955, that was our home. And really, where better to incubate a technological university than on the edge of a manufacturing plant.
Right, right. And it was originally the Lawrence Institute of Technology, and it was originally a trade school and a university, right?
Well, no, not really ever a trade school.
Okay.
Perhaps the confusion is that a lot of Henry Ford Trade School alumni came to Lawrence Tech to pursue higher education degrees. We were always basically a university, always offered, in fact, from the very beginning, offered bachelor's and graduate degrees in engineering. But what was unusual was that people could take classes at night, and that was very unusual during the Great Depression in that era. And you can just think of Henry and Edsel Ford thinking, oh boy, my employees who are working in manufacturing all day can come to Lawrence Tech at night and become better employees without ever having to leave the premises.
And back then, those work days were like 10 or 12 hours, though, weren't they?
They were 10 hours. Ford, I think, in the late 20s got down to an 8-hour work day. But those were very busy people back then.
So the school moved to Southfield when?
In 1955, and people at the time thought, geez, why are you moving out into the middle of nowhere? And the pictures of that time frame.
You could probably see cows from campus at that time.
And silos and barns. And it's worked out terrifically. Southfield is well positioned with its transportation system. And we've now grown to 107 acres, over 20 buildings, several of which are under construction right now. We've been adding housing, adding new technology facilities. And so it's really worked out very well.
So what are the biggest and sort of fastest growing programs at the school?
Well, Lawrence Tech was founded originally as an engineering college, and all of our programs have kind of grown from that origin. We have over 100 degree programs. The largest programs are still in engineering. Robotics engineering is coming on very strongly. All the life sciences, medically related engineering programs are strong. We have a very large College of Architecture also. In fact, it's the largest in Michigan. It's larger than all others combined. And over 50% of the licensed architects in Michigan are Lawrence Tech grads. Hmm. So that's a program that has always done very well and continues to do so. Then, of course, we have the full complement of programs in the arts and sciences and management, even an English degree.
How many students now? I have no idea.
Approximately 4,500 students, and they're going days, evenings, online, on weekends.
Hmm. So talk a little bit about Lawrence Tech's evolution from a commuter school to a more traditional college campus. I know you've added a couple of dorms in recent years. I'm sorry, residence centers or whatever the proper term is. You've added men's and women's soccer, men's and women's basketball. So you've got some sports there. It looks like you're trying more to attract the more traditional, 18 to 23 year old type college student these days.
Well, that's true, Matt. Lawrence Tech historically had been a commuter college. We have to go just because of the way that the number of high school students has been declining in Michigan. We've got to go further afield in students to find students. So we have over 30 states represented in our student body, and actually over 60 countries.
Wow.
So they're coming from all over the world to gain a Lawrence Tech education. We're very proud of that. We're working closely with the city of Southfield to develop more amenities within the city, help Southfield evolve as a college town. We opened up our third dorm in September, so we can house about close to 900 students on campus. Hmm. And there's also housing in the immediate vicinity too. So it's changing our campus. We have more activities. The sports programs that you mentioned are coming on strong. We had a nationally recognized athletic program back in the 1940s and 50s. We ended it to divert funding to academic purposes. And then about 4 years ago, we reactivated sports, and that's worked out very well. We have over 18 varsity programs at Lawrence Tech right now. And all of those students have a higher GPA than our general student population. So we're getting scholars and athletes.
Now, is it true you're going to get Michigan on your schedule next year? Not true. Okay.
Well, you better ask them.
The University of Michigan, yes, but U of M Dearborn.
Oh, okay. That's what it was.
Schedule.
I knew I heard something about that.
Roughly how many student athletes do you have then at the school now? Do you know?
Well, there's probably around 350 or so.
Wow. That's a significant chunk of the student body.
Yeah,
then.
So basketball, yeah. Soccer,
lacrosse,
hockey. It runs the full gamut. Actually, everything right now, probably except for track and field and football.
Ah, yes, football. Is there some thought about football? I know Davenport University has a football team that's actually joining NCAA Division II next year.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. At the Grand Rapids campus, they're going to build a nice little stadium and join the GLIAC with like Ferris State and Wayne State and Hillsdale schools at that level.
Hmm. Yeah, so, anything's possible, Matt. And we actually are adding baseball and softball this coming spring. So it is within the realm of possibility. Who knows?
Okay. Well, I know you have some of that 107 acres is either vacant or forested right now, right? So there is some room for expansion for the school.
We do, and much of the subdivision to the west of us is owned by Lawrence Tech, and we've been slowly acquiring residences there. So someday we'll be able to expand, we presume, to the west if we need that extra space.
Well, I just think the property value alone back in the old days when it was farmland, not so much, but now, holy cow, right?
It would have been better to acquire it back then, no doubt.
Yeah, it's kind of prime office space now, isn't it?
Right, right.
But you've also been expanding to the south in the city of Detroit. Talk about the new Detroit Center a little bit.
Yes, we have a fantastic new center for design and technology in Detroit on Woodward Avenue near Willits in Midtown, right along the new M1 rail route. And we have had programs in Detroit for probably 40 or 50 years. But this gives us a chance to consolidate them. There's four or five or six programs there, primarily through our College of Architecture. And this gives us really on-site right in the midst of things presence. And so we're looking to have a greater presence in Detroit. Our students are very much interested in the urban environment, and we see that growing in the future very much.
Might the long-term plan include housing in the city? I know there's probably a lot of young people who would enjoy that.
Well, I suppose that's true. That's true. I'm not aware of any immediate plans, but I think it is a possibility.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Lawrence Tech's programs. I know my current, about to be former employer, the Engineering Society, is very involved in middle school and high school outreach to get kids involved in STEM education and careers. Talk a little bit about Lawrence Tech's effort to sort of reach out to young people because those are, after all, the future customers.
Absolutely. You know, you have to have students in the pipeline, and there are tremendous opportunities in engineering and technology. Right here in the Detroit area, people forget that Detroit, Michigan, and the surrounding area is really an epicenter of some of the world's great science and technological accomplishments. Mm. And that's going to continue in the future. There's plenty of opportunities. We need more people in engineering. The companies who come to us say, we can really use your students, but we really need more of them. And so that's been the dilemma. And we have been working with a number of schools boost enrollment in STEM subjects. We have a wonderful program right now with the Detroit Public Schools that we launched last summer at the Sampson Middle School. And we see that growing. We hope to attract people as young as the primary grades through junior high.
Yeah, upper elementary is about where you start the outreach, right?
Right, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
What about do you have any idea how many women are in STEAM, STEM, whatever, at Lawrence Tech right now? What percent?
Well, overall, it actually depends on the program, but we're about between 25% and 30% female enrollment.
That's very impressive.
And again, we'd like to see that grow. There's, again, plenty of opportunities for women in STEM subject and STEAM subjects.
Yeah, I know Matt and I were talking about that when we were college students back when we were riding dinosaurs, that about 40% of the women were actually involved in engineering and those sorts of areas. So
yeah, architecture is probably closer to 50% female enrollment.
That's got the sort of design and artistic aspect to it. There's some fields of engineering like mechanical and computer where the numbers are still pretty bleak though, right?
So well, yeah, but again, opportunities are there. We have programs to try to show that there's plenty of opportunity. We have mentorships and we have programs that bring women in like the women who were just here on the program to kind of showcase to our students and to younger people that there are real opportunities and that women can do very well in all of the STEAM subjects.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that's – yeah, that's the thing that I've learned at the Engineering Society is they do those twice-a-year job fairs where they'll have 3,000 jobs up for grabs and they'll get 300 people walking in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have your choice of 10 offers if your qualifications line up right. It's really pretty amazing.
Speaking of which, let's because people may not have heard in the first segment, I know you're leaving ESD,
yep.
but there's going to be a partnership on Technology Century. Why don't you explain what
that's
all
about? I am leaving ESD effective Friday and starting Monday, February 8th.
But Bruce said he was going to send you to the Bahamas for a couple of weeks, didn't he?
Where did you hear that, Mike?
I thought I heard that, So
I would not mind, but I don't think that's happening.
Oh,
I'm going to become director of the News Bureau at Lawrence Tech effective February 8th. TechCentury.com is going to remain around. It's going to be co-branded with both Lawrence Tech and ESD content. This podcast will continue as well, and we'll feature ESD occasional guests, professors doing interesting research, new programs, and STEM outreach of the very type that we are talking about here today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're hoping to highlight some of the cool stuff going on at Lawrence Tech as part of this podcast as well. Real quick, I want to talk about Lawrence Tech. We've only got about a minute left, so real quick, Bruce. Lawrence Tech's recent rankings in various yardsticks, U.S. News and World Report, that
kind of
thing.
We've had some great rankings. Brookings Institute has ranked Lawrence Tech number 5 in terms of increasing the graduates' earning power. Groups like PayScale have listed Lawrence Tech in the top 100 colleges and universities in terms of the salaries that our students are able to command.
Which is what's the average ballpark figure?
Well, it's in the close to 70.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So it's an amazing testament to the power of a Lawrence Tech degree, the fact that many of our graduates are in the STEM and STEAM subjects, which pay very well. And so we're very proud of those rankings.
All right, kids, opportunity here. Listen up. Check it out, ltu.edu. I want to thank Bruce Annette, our guest from Lawrence Technological University, my about-to-be employer, and our other guests, Mike.
We had Amanda Luan, thank you.
And Nicole also.
Johnson Scheffler.
Yep, from Tech Divas.
Yes, and we had Christina Mathis from Rocket Fiber.
All right, thanks to all. We'll see you next week on the M Squared TechCast. Until next Monday at 3 p.m. or anytime at all on the internets, because you can download us at SoundCloud.com and iTunes. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.